Konnichiwa and welcome to the Total Football Soccer Show, Richmond's first, only, and therefore best soccer talk show. I'm Taylor.
And I'm Daryl.
And this week on the show...
If you're wondering why Taylor used up all his Japanese vocab in the intro there, it's because this week we're discussing Asian soccer.
Right, and we'll try and define what Asian soccer is, how the Asian Champions League works, and why Australia is for some reason included.
Closer to home, I attended the Richmond Asian American Indoor Soccer Tournament to find out which local community boasts the best football team.
We'll discover which Korean player the German national team attempted to steal when we list our top five favorite Asian players.
And we'll close with an Asian-themed spelling bee, in which Taylor and myself inadvertently prove that spelling and pronunciation are equally difficult. So this week, Taylor and myself are going to venture into the unknown, at least for us. We're going to talk about Asian soccer.
Yeah.
We're not going to pretend that it's something we're experts on or we know a great deal about.
Yeah, our pronunciation may show that.
Yeah, so apologies in advance for any mispronounced names or words, but we're going to try our best. We're going to have a good conversation about it and we'll see where it takes us.
Yeah, so I think to start off with, we should probably just kind of define Asia in terms of football.
Yeah, so you got the Asian Football Confederation,
right.
The AFC.
Mm-hmm.
And... I know when a lot of people hear Asian, they think of maybe East Asia, they think of Japan, Korea. But Asia is huge, right?
Yeah, I think that's an understatement. But yeah, it's pretty big.
All right, 46 footballing nations comprise Asia. And they're divided into five regions. So you've got Southeast Asia.
Which is, you know, Thailand or Vietnam.
You've got East Asia.
Which would be China, Japan, or the Koreas.
You've got West Asia.
Which would be the Middle East, pretty much. That's Saudi Arabia is the big one there.
Central Asia.
Iran or Uzbekistan.
And South Asia.
And then you got like India and Pakistan.
Okay, and there are two major outliers here.
Yeah, the first one being Australia.
Yes, which anyone who owns a globe or has ever seen a map would not think that Australia was in Asia.
Yeah, basically Australia was in Oceania, which is, you know, Australia, New Zealand, those kind of countries.
And then all the small, tiny islands, like Solomon Islands, I think, and the Cook
Fiji,
Islands.
Fiji, I think, is in there as well. And, you know, they pretty much dominated all the time, but they weren't guaranteed an automatic spot in the World Cup. They basically had to play a qualifier, so they could basically win their whole qualifying group, lose one game, and be eliminated from the World Cup.
Yeah, and I think they felt they weren't getting enough competitive football, because if you're playing the Cook Islands and Fiji, then you have to play, say, a South American team to
like
get a World
Uruguay
Cup spot.
Or something like that, you're going to struggle.
Yeah, it's a big step up. Okay, so for that reason, Australia have now joined the Asian Confederation, and they've successfully qualified for the World Cup this year through the Asian tournament.
So big ups to them. Well done, Australia.
And then the other one is Israel.
Yeah.
Which geographically is very much within the Asian Confederation region.
Mm-hmm.
But they currently compete in the European international football tournaments.
The main reason for that is simply some Asian countries still don't recognize Israel. Obviously, if Israel tried to play a lot of, you know, different Asian countries, there would probably be fan violence. There could be issues like that. So
yeah,
that
some of the countries sort of refused to play Israel anyway, which is part of the reason why they originally left. So for that reason, Israel is in Europe.
So... as we said, you have this, you know, huge area with a lot of different teams. In fact, those 46 member nations that we mentioned make up over half the world's population. I mean, obviously, China and India alone make up 2.5 billion.
That's quite
and
a lot.
So, yeah, and you know, you compare that to, say, UEFA, the European body. They have 53 members. Their population is only 836 million. So clearly, there's a disparity. And yet, you know, Asian nations haven't really been successful as European nations or South American countries. And I'd say that you kind of have historical reasons for that.
Okay, yeah.
Basically, soccer was brought to at least Eastern Asia by colonial powers, basically Britain and France.
Right.
And, you know, that goes through, you know, World War One, World War Two, until the United States comes into play, you know, with rebuilding Japan, with its action in Korea.
Right.
And essentially, because of that influence, the United States basically had more cultural control in the area, and so baseball became dominant over soccer. And that kind of continued on throughout, you know, the 20th century, until you started to see soccer become more prominent, leagues, you know, come into existence, like the K-League, I think, was in the mid-1980s, the J-League was in the early 1990s, and it's pretty much been growing since then.
Yeah, my favorite thing about those leagues is the way they name them. So the South Korean League is the K-League, and the Japanese League is the J-League, and I think the Indian League is recently relaunched as the I-League. It's fantastic.
Nice, yeah. But I think there is a little bit of confusion there, which I myself may have just thrown out, which is the idea that, you know, you have half the world's population. Why aren't they better? You know, they have this huge pool to draw from. And I think it's sort of like if you look at India, India is one of the world's most populous Muslim countries, but only 10% of it is actually Muslim, but that's still 100 million people. I think it's the same thing. You have all these people to draw from, but you know, not all of them are playing soccer and only some are watching. And so you're not going to get this huge talent pool like you would in, say, South America or Europe.
Yeah, that makes sense. And then there's also, even if all those people were playing football, you can still only field 11 men.
Yeah. So that's a valid point.
If you could play everybody, then the billion or so people of China would probably beat the 60 million people of England.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not how it works, is it?
Yeah, probably not.
It'd be a very crowded field as well.
Yeah, yeah. And so football in Asia is growing, and now there are kind of movements to make it maybe as reputable as European soccer, or at least in terms of international competition.
Yeah, it seems there's a market there.
Yeah.
As those economies get stronger, Indian economy, Chinese economy,
right,
then there's more of a market there, mm-hmm. and football's there to be exploited mm-hmm. in a way.
Yeah, and so I guess the big one we're talking about would be the Asian Champions League, kind of, I don't know, would you say a carbon copy of the UEFA Champions League?
Yeah, I mean, the Asian Confederation have clearly looked at the success, the financial success, and the popularity mm-hmm. of the UEFA Champions League in Europe
yeah.
and thought, we'd like that.
Yeah, but so, I think they got a little ways to go there.
Well, yeah, but I mean, they're making strides, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we should mention, just last weekend, it was the Asian Champions League final.
Yeah, it was the Pohang Steelers.
Pohang Steelers of Korea beat
Al Ittihad, I think, correct. Of Saudi Arabia.
That's what it says on my piece of paper.
There you go. Yeah, they beat them 2-1. And I think that you look at that, and that's not really a surprise that you have a Korean team and a Saudi team, because I think the overall Asian Champions League is kind of structured to give the more developed countries an advantage.
Yeah, more so than in Europe.
Yeah, essentially you have like, there's the 10 top leagues that are ranked by the AFC. You know, you have like Japan, South Korea, China, Saudi Arabia, like in that order. And those teams automatically get, I believe, 30 of the 32 places in the tournament.
Yeah, so nearly all of them. There are two spots that may be available mm-hmm. to teams from the lower nations.
Yeah.
But they have to play through a qualifying process to get there, right?
Exactly.
Okay. I'm thinking it's not just a coincidence that those better footballing nations are also the more wealthy nations.
Yeah, probably
where there's
not.
TV money and mm-hmm. merchandising to be had.
Yeah.
So it seems like the Asian Champions League are deliberately favouring the select mm-hmm. few. And
yeah.
I know we can argue whether that's good or bad, because in one way, they're concentrating on growing and promoting and improving the quality of football in certain nations.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the fastest way to do it for the select few. But then the bottom guys sort of get left behind.
Yeah, you definitely create a big disparity. Another thing that I thought was interesting about the final, the Champions League final from this weekend, is that I don't think it drew much interest in the United States. I don't think it drew much interest in Europe. And I'm not even sure it drew that much interest in Asia. For example, for the final, the stadium was only half full. It's held in the Olympic Stadium in Japan, which seats 48,000, and only just over 25,000 show up.
Maybe one of the reasons for that is that the final was in Japan and it was a South Korean team and a Saudi Arabian team.
But that hits at kind of the point there. It's like, if you look at the 2008 Champions League final, which is held in Moscow, it featured two English teams. It'd be Manchester United and Chelsea. And yet 67,000 people attended that match. You have these big clubs in Europe where people will travel anywhere to see them. Whereas in Asia, you know, not so much. And I think that kind of hits at the heart of the problem. You know, I read one study that indicated that, you know, in a lot of Asian countries, people tend to care more about the national team than they do their local club.
And I think maybe you can draw some parallels with the situation here in the USA.
Yeah, for example, as we talked about, you know, a couple weeks ago, MLS doesn't really have like an established tradition. And so a lot of people are going to support Manchester United or Real Madrid or Barcelona than they will DC United or Real Salt Lake.
Yeah, we've talked about this a lot before, where mm-hmm. there is a soccer culture here.
Yeah.
But people watch things like the English Premier League more than Major League Soccer. And it seems that that's the same sort of thing in Asia.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you look at, you know, Manchester United, Chelsea, Real Madrid, they all do preseason tours of Asia because they have that fan base there. They want to expand on it. And, you know, like the Suwon Blue Wings in Korea don't need to do that expedition because they already have some fans, but clearly not that many.
Yeah, and it's very profitable for, say, Manchester United or Real Madrid,
mm-hmm.
first of all, to go there. Because now that they're popular, there's money to be made just for turning up.
Definitely.
But then also, while you're there, they're promoting themselves because it's a huge, huge market for merchandise
mm-hmm.
and for TV rights and all those kinds of things. I mean, it's a huge money source.
Yeah, definitely.
It's only going to get bigger.
Yeah. All right. So then what other similarities do we see between Asian soccer and American soccer?
One of the other things we think about is foreign stars.
Yeah, definitely.
In all the leagues, in mm-hmm. the US leagues and in the Asian leagues, mm-hmm. It's still the the big name foreign players that get all the attention. I think like Beckham here. I'm thinking guys like Zico went over there, was a huge, huge star. And he stuck around, his coaching now as well.
Yeah, who's playing in Uzbekistan right now?
Rivaldo.
Yeah, still playing at like 104 years old.
I dare you to pronounce the name of the team he's playing for.
Not even going close to it.
But I do know they're managed by Big Phil Scolari. There's big money there, I think, from oil in Uzbekistan.
And then I think the final parallel would be that in the MLS, you don't have a system of relegation promotion. In a lot of the leagues in Asia, you don't either. And so that's kind of what the AFC is realizing, is that a lot of the reason, at least in their mind, why they're not stronger on the international level is because there's not a lot of domestic competition. And so they're trying to restructure.
It's about depth, right?
Yeah,
it's about
exactly.
Depth beyond the top tier. There's mm-hmm. You want lower leagues where talent can develop and you can spread further throughout the country by having teams in different parts of that country.
Exactly. And so they're planning on essentially restructuring 10 leagues, the 10 most prominent leagues, to have better facilities, have more financial transparency, so you can kind of see where clubs are really putting their money, to encourage better competition, and then, as we hit on, to encourage relegation and promotion.
Wow, so depending on how those reforms go, in places like Australia, I suppose, is included.
Yeah, that's the big one. Like Australia, it's not based on, but it has a system very similar to, more North American franchises, where you don't have relegation promotion, you just have those set clubs.
So Major League Soccer can look at what happens maybe with the reforms in places like Australia, Japan, South Korea. Mm-hmm. And if that promotion relegation change is successful, then maybe that's a model that Major League Soccer can follow.
Maybe. And speaking of the links between Asian and American soccer, this past weekend saw the Richmond Asian American Indoor Soccer Tournament here in Virginia. Daryl was in attendance, and after the break, we'll have his interview with tournament organizer Chris Hahn.
You're listening to the Total Football Soccer Show with Daryl
and Taylor on Richmond Independent Radio 97.3, radio for the rest of us.
Okay, Taylor, so this past Saturday, I went along to SCORE, the Sports Centre of Richmond, to watch the first annual Richmond Asian American Indoor Soccer Tournament.
Nice.
There were four teams, each representing their local Asian American community.
No.
I went along to watch, and I also interviewed tournament organiser Chris Hahn. Thanks for joining us, Chris.
Thanks for having me.
I was hoping you could tell our listeners a little about the tournament.
I am part of one of the board members at Virginia, Asian American Society of Central Virginia. And we've been wanting to, plan an event where, everybody can get together and just have fun and kind of get to know each other, develop new relationships. And, this is, one of my passions. So, I got in touch with each leader from the community, and we thought this would be a great idea to get together. So everybody loves soccer, especially in Asia. So
can you tell us exactly which communities are here, who's represented here today?
Sure. There are four communities, from the Korean community, Chinese community, Thai community, and Cambodia.
All right, so there's four teams. Can you explain a little about how the tournament has worked today? Sort of a straight knockout or a league system or...
This is because we only have four teams today. Every team played each other. And so first three games were a preliminary round. And so this is the fourth game right now they're playing. It's the championship. So out of those three games, we picked two best teams with the best records.
As I'm watching, Korea are beating the Thai team.
Yeah.
And you're on the Korean team, that's right?
Yep.
Okay, so you got to be pretty happy right now.
Well, we have a lot of players that play regularly, we got some youngins playing for our team, so yeah.
So that's been the difference.
Yeah, I would say so.
it's looked really friendly to me. I've seen a lot of guys helping each other up after they fall down and things like that.
Yeah, that's been our main focus. I know that this can be very competitive, but. We want this to be a friendly competition, and because within the communities there may be divisions, but we want to do something positive to bring everyone together, and so that's been our main focus.
Okay, so it's about bringing the Asian community together.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Excellent. So now all of the guys on your team are from South Korea.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Or have South Korean heritage.
Yep.
So I wanted to ask you the obvious question about South Korea and North Korea both qualifying for World Cup 2010.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely support both teams. Definitely if they are both qualified, I'm going to support them. But, it's going to be funny how if they play together in the World Cup, you know, I'm going to be supporting South Korea, but
of course,
yeah. Overall, you know, we want them to do well, you know.
So is it almost like having two teams?
In a way, yes. But we are, even though, you know, North Korea, South Korea, you know, two different countries. But yeah, in a way, it's one country because we support them, and you know, I hope they support us too. But
all right, here's a question. I know a lot of Man United fans based in England would like to know: is it Park Ji-sung or Ji-sung Park?
Well, you know, in America, you say the first name and the last name, you know. But in Korea, you say the last name first and then, you know, first name last. So it is Park Ji-sung. That's how they say it in Korea.
Yeah.
But, you know, in here in America or England, it's Ji-sung Park.
Okay, so final question. I'm assuming you're going to do this again next year.
Yeah, we're looking forward to have this annually. So that you know, people in Richmond can really, you know, get involved and participate, and our mission and our vision is to, you know, bring in more communities, you know, to really get involved and, you know, get to know one another.
So the final standings from the Richmond Asian American Indoor Soccer Tournament were Korea in first place, mm-hmm. Thailand in second place, China in third, and Cambodia in fourth.
And almost as important, you finally learned how to pronounce Ji-sung Park's proper name.
Or Park Ji-sung.
Well, there you go. Yeah, well said.
You're listening to the Total Football Soccer Show with Daryl.
And Taylor.
On Richmond Independent Radio 97.3, radio for the rest of us.
So it's top five time now, and Daryl and I will be giving our top five favorite Asian players. Now, as we said, we don't know a whole lot about Asian football, so some of these selections may seem a bit strange, but just remember, this isn't the best Asian players. It's just our top five favorite. All right, so Daryl, you want to start us?
Yeah, I'm going to start with South Korea's Kim Dong-jin. It's mainly because there's sort of an incorrect stereotype that all East Asian players are small, mm-hmm. which basically isn't true, or at least not in this guy's case. Kim Dong-jin is 6 feet tall, plays left back or centre back, and he's survived a good many years playing for Zenit St. Petersburg in the Russian League, which is pretty physical.
Yeah, a little bit.
All right.
All right, well, my number five would be Ali Karimi. He's an Iranian winger who's played for Persepolis, which is one of the biggest clubs in Iran, yeah. and then Bayern Munich, which is one of the biggest clubs in Germany.
The biggest club in Germany.
There you go.
FC Hollywood.
Well, up until recently they were. he makes my list mainly because he was one of the players that wore green to protest the disputed election in Iran. As a result, he was retired or forcibly retired, whatever that really means. But a guy who stands up for, you know, what he believes, football players aren't necessarily known for that. So for me, that definitely gets big props.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with that one. My number four is An Jung-kwon. He's not necessarily my favorite player. It's more that the story around him is kind of interesting. Uh-huh. You might know him as the South Korean who scored the winning goal against Italy.
In the 2002 World Cup?
Yeah, in extra time.
Yeah.
Very, very controversial because the Italians feel that they were cheated in that game. They had a Tomasi goal ruled out for offside. They had a red card. And I've got some sympathy with them.
Yeah.
But the amazing thing is that Arne was on loan at an Italian team at the time.
Perugia, I believe?
Correct.
Yeah.
Who, after the tournament, cancelled his contract. The quote
harsh,
from the Perugia
man.
Chairman was, "I have no intention of paying the salary of someone who has ruined Italian football."
God, those Italians don't play around, man.
I don't know. It's pretty rough. But he did bounce back. He ended up playing for Metz in France and Duisburg in Germany. So he still had a European career.
My number four is also a Korean, but not from the south. This one's from the north. It's Park Doo-ik, which is not a household name, I'd say. But he scored maybe one of the most famous goals of any Asian in any World Cup. He was playing for the North Korean side in 1966, and he scored the winner against Italy, which actually sent North Korea through to the knockout round, which was, you know, pretty much unheard of at that point. He was actually only the second Asian to ever score in the World Cup. And to reward him for his service when he came home, he was still in the army, so he was promoted to sergeant. So, yeah, so, you know, he was a soldier, an officer, a footballer. He even later taught gymnastics. So really, you know, Park Doo-ik, he could do it all.
Wow, a renaissance man. Okay, my number three is not Korean. It's Japanese. It's Kazuyoshi Miura,
mm-hmm.
better known as Kazu. So he may be before your time a little, Taylor.
I think a little bit.
In the mid-90s, when the J-League was just getting going,
mm-hmm.
he was like a pop star. He was the guy, like, people had his poster. He had like bleached hair. And I think he also had, even on his shirt, instead of his normal name, he had Kazu.
Nice.
This guy had a great career. He played in Brazil. He played in Italy. played in Croatia, played in Australia, as well as Japan, some other countries. I looked him up to see where he played. Mm. I found he was still playing.
Wow.
He's 42 years old.
He's still playing.
Yeah, he's playing for Yokohama in the J-League second division at 42.
He should have been on our retirement list.
He should, yeah.
2 weeks ago.
Yeah, he should have made the list.
Oh, well. Well, for those of you just tuning in, we're listing our top five favorite Asian players, and I'm on to my number three, which is also a Japanese player, and that's Hiroteshi Nakata.
Okay.
You could list him for a number of reasons. He played in a lot of the top Italian clubs, including Roma, Parma, Fiorentina. He was the two-time Asian Footballer of the Year. But for me, most important, sadly, was that he was in all the great Nike commercials of my youth. He was in the one where like they're stealing the ball from the robots. He was in the cage commercials that were on in the 2002 World Cup. And you know, he's in there with Edgar Davids and Ronaldo and all these big-name players. And then there's like this Japanese guy, and I'm like, I don't know who that is. But then the 2002 World Cup rolls around, and he's front and center, and it's kind of like one of the first Asian players I was really familiar with.
Yeah, that's how I am with Kazu. So I suppose it's like who you're exposed to and who you get familiar
with. Yeah, definitely.
All right, my number two, who I know is not on your list, is Park Ji-sung, the Manchester United Korean
player.
Not
on my list, yeah.
Why don't you tell me why he's not on your list before I tell you why he is on my list?
I don't really have any good reason. He's not one of my favorite Asian players.
Is he also not one of your favorite Man United players?
He is not one of my favorite Manchester United players, yeah.
And why is that?
He works as hard as he can. I don't think he's like as technically skilled as some of the players. I think he has kind of a bad first touch. He's going to give you 100% effort, but there's a big difference between effort and overall ability when it comes to playing.
See, that's sort of why I like him. Mm-hmm. I remember when Manchester United signed him, there was a suggestion that maybe he was there just for marketing purposes, to sell Man United jerseys in Korea. And so I thought maybe we just wouldn't see much of him. Mm-hmm. But I've been really impressed because I think his work rate and his discipline playing on the wing, like he'll track back, has led to him being regularly one of Ferguson's first team choices.
Or first team substitutions, yeah.
Yeah, but he's not just like wasting away in the reserves. He's really made a career for himself.
No, and one thing that I do remember was when United signed him, it was, you know, when Chelsea was really signing every talented player, and United were kind of not necessarily fading because, you know, like third in the EPL isn't that bad, but they certainly weren't where they are right now. And Park kind of had his choice of where he wanted to go, and he chose to play for Manchester United. So I will always have, you know, a certain love and respect for players that choose Manchester United over other big name clubs.
All right. Isn't he absolutely huge in Korea now as well?
Yes. I believe they have multiple streets named after him in Korea. So
do they have a park named after him?
I hate you, Daryl.
Park Ji-sung Park.
Oh, no, I got it. I got it. Thank you. Let's move on.
Jokes are always best when you have to explain them.
My number two is Yunus Mahmoud. He's an Iraqi striker who plays in Qatar. But
he's
most famous for scoring the winner in the 2007 Asian Cup, which saw Iraq beat Saudi Arabia and bring home their first silverware really ever. And
huge upset, right?
It was a massive upset. And, you know, obviously Iraq, not exactly focused on sports right now. So to bring it home was a big deal. But the bigger thing was that if you saw reports of it in the street, it was kind of everyone was out celebrating. And if you look at the team itself, Mahmoud is a Sunni, and he scored the game winner off his head. The guy who crossed in the ball is a Kurd, and the goalkeeper who made like ridiculous saves the whole game to keep him in it is a Shia. So it's like the team brought together all the ethnic groups in Iraq that really can't be brought together any other way. And so it's, you know, yet another reason why I love soccer, but Mahmoud is kind of the figurehead of all that. So
okay, now I'm jealous because I wish he was on my list.
There you go.
All right. Okay, my number one favorite Asian player is Saudi Arabian striker Sami Al-Jaber.
Oh, okay.
He was a big deal playing for Al-Hilal, which is a big Saudi Arabian team. Mm-hmm. But the reason I like him so much is that he very briefly came and played for my team in England, Wolverhampton Wanderers.
I should have seen that coming.
Yeah. And he was actually a huge disappointment. I had high hopes for him. I thought this would be the new guy because his record with Al-Hilal and with the Saudi Arabian national team was ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Like, he's just banging in goals. But he came to Wolves and just had bad luck. Endless bad luck. It took over a month for his international clearance to come through. He made like three sub appearances. Then he had to go off to the Asian Cup, got injured at the Asian Cup, came back. Then his father was ill. He had to go back to Saudi Arabia on compassionate leave. And when he came back after that, Wolves had changed manager. Mm-hmm. The new manager, Dave Jones, wanted to extend his loan. Al-Hilal said, no, he's been on loan 8 months, make a decision. And that was it. Then he went back, so we lost him. So he's on my list for what could have been. He could have been the first Saudi Arabian to hit it big, could have been with Wolves, he could have led us to glory, but he didn't.
Well, my number one is a man who led multiple teams to multiple glories. His name is Cha Boom-kun. Are you familiar with him?
Absolutely not, but I feel like I will be in maybe 2 minutes' time.
Probably. He is a South Korean player, and he's considered one of the best Asian footballers of all time. From 1978 to 1988, he made over 300 appearances for top German clubs when Asian leagues were sort of still just being founded, I guess.
Yeah, and it seems like weird for an Asian player, or unique at least for an Asian player, to be in Europe at that time.
Yeah, and a couple of interesting things about him. He's the only Asian player to ever lift the UEFA Cup. He was the Bundesliga MVP in 1985.
Wow.
And until 1999, he held the record for most goals scored by a foreigner in the Bundesliga, which is a pretty big deal.
It's fantastic.
The more interesting one, there are stories that go around. I'm not sure if they're true or not, but there are stories that Germany actually tried to naturalize him because he was so good they wanted him to play striker for them.
Right.
I don't know if those are necessarily true, but one thing I do know is for sure is that Jürgen Klinsmann, the famed German striker, once said of Cha, I am considered an accomplished footballer, but I am not on the level of Cha, which is pretty high praise. His other high praise being that he was voted the Asian footballer of the century. So for all those reasons, I got to put him as my number one.
Okay, and I'm glad I've heard of him now.
Yeah, there you go. So that was our top five favorite Asian footballers. Obviously, we probably missed a couple in there. So if you've got your own top five, please feel free to send it to us at soccer@wrar.org.
Or visit us at our website at podcast.theoffside.com and leave a comment. All right, Taylor, so it's that time of the show again.
Awesome.
Time for the spelling bee.
Mm-hmm.
I currently lead 6-3, just to remind you.
Thank you.
All right, this week's topic is, not surprisingly, Asian players.
Right.
So we're going to challenge each other to spell an Asian player.
Fair enough. All right, Daryl, the person that I want you to spell, I've avoided bringing up like 7 different times tonight because he's been all over the place, but I've avoided so that you would have to spell for me Chinese striker and former Manchester United legend Dong Fengzhu.
Oh, okay. Dong is D-O-N-G.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen this name before.
Yeah.
Fengzhu is F-H-E-N-G-Z-O-U.
Not even close.
Oh.
That'd be Dong, you got right, and Fengzhu is F-A-N-G-Z-H-U-O.
Wow, nowhere near.
Yeah, and for those of you not familiar with esoteric Manchester United players, Dong played one game. He made one appearance, and then he was shipped off to some other club.
Somewhere else.
Yeah.
All right. My player for you
is
the 2008 AFC Player of the Year from Uzbekistan.
Oh, thank you.
Awesome. Plays alongside Rivaldo. His name is Serva Jeparov.
Serva, S-I-R-V-A. Jeparov, D-J-E-P-E-R-O-V.
Oh, pretty close. Serva is spelt like English server, S-E-R-V-E-R.
Mm-hmm.
Jeparov is spelt D-J-E-P-A-R-O-V.
I would be more upset if I hadn't been so woefully incorrect on the first name. Wow. So we both missed there? Yeah. Wow. Great. So the score stays at 6-3, and I've still got my work cut out for me.
Till next week.
And with that, we come to the end of the show. Daryl and I have done our best to discuss Asian soccer, a topic about which we're not entirely familiar.
Not entirely.
But to be fair, we're not the only ones. As Japanese striker Hidetoshi Nakata once said during his time in Italy,
"Living in Europe, I was surprised to find out just how little everyone knows about Japan."
And with that, we'll say, sayonara.